Blog Talk Radio.
Bring
is Abayomi Azikiwe, and welcome back to another edition of the Pan-African Journal Worldwide Radio Broadcast, a special edition of our program for today, Sunday, May 16th, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in once again to another edition of the Pan-African Journal. Later on, we'll be coming up with our regular Pan-African Newswire reports. We'll have dispatches on the escalating violence in the Palestinian state, where more than 40 people have been killed in Gaza just over the last 24 hours. In the southern African state of Zimbabwe, the government says it is continuing to roll out its vaccination program and other mitigation efforts to curb the COVID-19 pandemic. The Horn of Africa state of Ethiopia has postponed the national elections once again, this time due to security issues inside of the country. And the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, has called for all so-called foreign rebels to leave the North African state of Libya in the aftermath of the installation of a government of national unity, a second government of national unity over the last 5 years. And in the second and third hours, we look more in depth at the situation in Palestine with reports and analyses of the developing situation in West Asia. We'll also deal with other issues on African affairs as well as issues internationally. These and other features will be brought to you during the course of our program. Stay tuned. We'll take a musical interlude. We'll be back with more of our program for this week.
Lina mwasi wanga yeba kaya ngai na yote ya makira na butu zokina lali na kolota seyo ishirilina zoki na kolia na bazi ya mote mapemo pasuki nono mwasi wanga kanita kabise ngobya mokili Kerili na bazaka kae, senorita yo te quiero, atalelo na zaliwa yoe, senorita yo te quiero, enaliwa na jalise bayoe, senorita yo te quiero, kerili na bazaka kae, senorita yo te quiero, atalelo na zaliwa yoe, senorita yo te quiero, enaliwa na jalise bayoe, senorita yo te quiero.
Thank you. lingana yo Sosari makasi ebo tine la roto Na yo tine lo lingi yo boyangaje Moko makae kote kana moriri La roto wasyo Kokani satero Na ebi yo so suwinde batekyo Yebi sanganye na boyinde kotondo Na ebi yo so na kone la kiyo Na yo kale lo lo bina fimi yo Epaya nanyo
Bangala,
Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa. Kolonel Bangala. Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa.
Oh, Kolonel Bangala. Otiyo motema mbosi lisa mbulo yo.
Kolonel Bangala. Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa. Kolonel Bangala. Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa. Colonel Bangala, Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa. Colonel Bangala, Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa.
Colonel Bangala, Mobundi monene ya delicance juvenile.
Colonel Bangala, Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa. Colonel Bangala. Mobongisi monene ya vile ya kisasa.
Mokili makalamba,
nazio na mai na komisio netanga Lelo na komi mabe mokolo wana yali wana koma kindenza kompo Ane kwaye jambe ya sebe le paro Deke le jour pare Tout le charme s'envole Bomba bomba mabe mingi aniye Na ye bisi yo na boyo Nazi mwasi miso mike Solo moke ya lolendo Bomba bomba mabe mingi aniye Na ye bisi yo na boyo Nazi mwasi miso mike Solo moke ya lolendo Namekaki mama na kanisa kiteyo koko sangaidiyo Siko yonga na moniye Nokyolobi balobi nangaye Nalingi na yeba badalelo yo Ozalise wanga motema Pona lingiteo, bapa kola, gai bozo bawa. Mama na kanisa kiteyo koko sangaidi yo Siko yonga damoniye Nokyolobi balobi nangaye Nalingi na yeba badalelo yo Ozalise wanga motema Pona lingiteo, papa kola, gai bozo bawa. Limalu, nalinga yebisanga, naboy nanga koyoka, sangi sangi yabato. Limalu, Talanga se mo valie, moto nyoso ako bungaka, moto nyoso ako salaka wo. Di malu, na linga ye bisangai, na boy nanga koyoka, songi songi abato. Mama, yoke langa wa yondiye, oyo kisanga sodite, gai se wa yoye.
Bella bella chata, tanda kunde tuta mitata.
Uno es su canto, decía, uno
Atena miso nzambe bolingo kosamba confiance nga na pesaki lelo saboteo Okoyiba pona mbongo balukaka na mwinda teo mama okoyiba Zaire pona bilongyo Okombondela atena miso nzambe na koka pego limbisa tena denge usaboteo Na kokwela
Kwa loka sopo
Ah, tu comprends français?
Moi pas connais français. Tu reconnais?
Oyebi lingala?
Moi t'es pas, yebite lingala t'es.
Allez, viens, on va prendre un verre, allez.
Moi bois pas. Tu bois beaucoup?
Ah ah, les Ponzi, moi comprends pas français. Ah ah, Brazzaville, moi comprends pas français. Ah ah, Ilonto, moi parlais pas lingala. Ah ah, Bizavi, moi comprends pas lingala.
Alegría,
es sabroso,
alegría,
la vida del
mundo, es sabroso, la
La Belgique est Na nakati ya pongi maye baniko ne kanga ina misori mawe kangi ngai balo chisinga mema boli kona kada yo itiliteu
Yo Loko funta kangai di milieu. Leo kata kangai bare sarobo. La vie tango yo patrona kai. Kanisa mwasina banango omawa. Tango na zala chiko teka chikaretio. Nazwa kameya na boko loko bana. Yoko nyoko longa yomba wate. Yoko nyoko longa yomba wate.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pan-African Journal Worldwide Radio Broadcast, this special edition of our program, and we just heard the music of the TPOK Jazz Orchestra, and that was music directed and largely written by Francois Makati, better known as Franco. Music recorded and released during the mid-1960s, African classical music from the 1960s. Right now we want to move into our Pan-African Newswire segment of our program. And our lead story, of course, deals with the ongoing struggle in Palestine. The United Nations Security Council and Muslim nations have convened an emergency meeting earlier today to demand a stop to civilian bloodshed as Israeli warplanes carried out the deadliest single attacks in nearly a week of unrelenting Hamas rocket barrages and Israeli airstrikes. U.S. President Joe Biden gave no sign of pressuring Israel to agree to an immediate ceasefire, despite new calls from some Democrats for the Biden administration to get more involved. His ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, told an emergency high-level meeting of the Security Council that the United States was, quote, working tirelessly through diplomatic channels, unquote, to stop the fighting. But as fighting in Israel and Gaza surged to its worst level since 2014 and international outcry grew, the Biden administration determined to wrench U.S. foreign policy focus away from the Middle East and Afghanistan showed no immediate sign of deepening its involvement. Diplomatic appeals by other countries for Hamas and Israel to stop their fire showed no sign of progress. Thomas Greenfield warned that the return to armed conflict would not only put a negotiated so-called two-state solution to the decades-old Palestinian-Israeli conflict even further out of reach. And in occupied Palestine, known as the State of Israel, Hadi Amir, a deputy assistant dispatched by the United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken, to try to de-escalate the crisis, met with Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz, who thanked the United States for its ongoing support. Blinken himself headed out earlier today on an unrelated tour of Nordic countries. He made calls from the plane to Egypt and other nations working to broker a ceasefire. telling Egypt that all parties, quote, should de-escalate tensions and bring a halt to the violence, unquote. Representative Adam Schiff, Democratic chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said earlier today that he joined Senator Bernie Sanders, a Vermont independent, in calling on Biden to step up pressure on both sides to end current fighting and revive talks to resolve Israel's conflict in flashpoints with the Palestinian nation. I think the administration needs to push harder on Israel and the Palestinian Authority to stop the violence, to bring about a ceasefire and end these hostilities and get back to a process of trying to resolve this longstanding conflict. That's according to Congressman Adam Schiff, who is a Democrat from California. He told this to the CBS Face the Nation program earlier today. The Biden administration officials have urged calm, but have said nothing publicly about prodding the state of Israel, which it provides $4 billion in direct assistance annually, to immediately go along with a push by the North African state of Egypt and others for an immediate ceasefire. Thomas Greenfield said U.S. diplomats were engaging with Israel, Egypt, and Qatar along with the United Nations. Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City flattened three buildings and killed at least 42 people today. This is according to medical officials in Gaza, told since Hamas and Israel opened their air and artillery battles to at least 188 killed in Gaza. And the Israelis have admitted that eight of their people have been killed. Some 55 children in Gaza and a five-year-old boy in Israel were among the dead. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told Israelis in a televised address earlier today that the state of Israel wants to levy a heavy price on Gaza and the Hamas rulers among the Palestinians. That will take time, Netanyahu said, signaling the war would rage on for now. Representatives of Muslim nations met to demand Israel halt attacks that are killing Palestinian civilians in the crowded Gaza Strip. The meeting of the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation also saw Turkey and some others criticize a U.S.-backed push under which the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and other Islamic nations signed bilateral deals with Israel to normalize their relations, stepping over the wreckage of moribund international efforts to broker peace between Israel and the Palestinians long term. The massacre of Palestinian children today follows the purported normalization, that's according to Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. At the virtual meeting of the Security Council, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the United Nations was actively engaging all parties for an immediate ceasefire. Returning to the scenes of Palestinian rocket fire and Israeli airstrikes in the fourth of such war between Israel and the Palestinians only perpetuates the cycle of death, destruction, and despair and pushes farther the horizon, Guterres said, the Secretary General of the United Nations. Eight foreign ministers spoke at the Security Council session, reflecting the seriousness of the conflict, with almost all urging an end to the fighting. Efforts by China, Norway, and Tunisia to get the United Nations' most powerful body to issue a statement, including a call for the succession of hostilities, have been blocked so far by Washington, which is Israel's closest ally. Diplomats say the United States is concerned it could interfere with diplomatic efforts to stop the violence. Biden's predecessor, President Donald Trump, had thrown U.S. support solidly behind Israel, enthusiastically welcoming Netanyahu as an ally in Trump's focus on confronting the Islamic Republic of Iran. Trump gave little time to efforts by past U.S. administrations to push so-called peace accords between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, as well as the Palestinians in Gaza. Instead, encouraging and rewarding Arab nations to sign two-country normalization deals with Israel, actually coercing them to carry out such deals in contravention of international law and also in total disregard of the legitimate struggle of the Palestinian people. Biden instead calls Middle East and Central Asia conflicts a distraction from U.S. foreign policy priorities, including competition with China. He sought to calm some conflicts and extricate the U.S. from others, including ending U.S. military support for a Saudi-led war in Yemen, so they say. They say they're also planning to pull U.S. troops from Afghanistan, which remains as well to be seen, and trying to return to a nuclear deal with Iran, although they still maintain sanctions on the Islamic Republic in Tehran. Biden officials have enlisted deeper Israeli-Palestinian peace efforts of their agenda. The problem won't go away, said Tamar Kaufman-Weitz, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for the Middle East in the Obama administration. Current fighting reveals how deeply unstable is the status quo between Israelis and Palestinians and how urgently a new political path is needed to move this conflict toward negotiated solutions. Now, earlier today, Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City flattened three buildings and killed at least 42 people. Palestinian health authorities made this statement. This has been the deadliest single attack in the latest round of violence. Despite the toll and international efforts to broker a ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu signaled a fourth war with Gaza's Hamas rulers would rage on. In a televised address, Netanyahu said the attacks were continuing at full force and would take time. Israel wants to levy a heavy price on Palestinians, he said, flanked by his defense minister and political rival Benny Gantz, in a show of Zionist unity. Hamas also pressed on, launching rockets from civilian areas in Gaza towards civilian areas in Israel. One slammed into a synagogue in the southern city of Ashkelon hours before evening services for the Jewish holiday of Shabbat, Israeli emergency services said. No injuries were reported. In the Israeli air assault, families were buried under piles of cement, rubble, and twisted rebar. A yellow cannery lay crushed on the ground. Shards of glass and debris covered streets blocks away from the major downtown thoroughfare, where the three buildings were hit over the course of 5 minutes around 1 a.m. this morning. The hostilities have repeatedly escalated over the past week, marking the worst fighting in the territory that is home to 2 million Palestinians since Israel launched a massive bombing campaign in 2014, some 7 years ago, under the Barack Obama administration. I have not seen this level of destruction through my 14 years of work, said Samir El-Khatib, an emergency rescue official in Gaza, not even in the 2014 war. Rescuers fearlessly dug through the rubble using excavators and bulldozers amid clouds of heavy dust. One shouted, "Can you hear me?" into a hole. Minutes later, first responders pulled a survivor out. The Gaza Health Ministry said 16 women and 10 children were among those killed, with more than 50 people wounded. Haya Adeb Dalal, 21, who lives in a building next to one that was destroyed, said she was sleeping when the airstrike sent her fleeing into the street. She accused Israel of not giving its usual warning to residents to leave before launching such an attack. "We are tired," she said. "We need a truce. We can't bear it anymore." The Israeli Army spokesperson office said the strike targeted Hamas's, quote, underground military infrastructure, unquote. As a result of the strike, quote, the underground facility collapsed, causing the civilian houses' foundations above them to collapse as well, leading to unintended consequences, the Israeli government said. Among those reported killed was Dr. Iman Abu Al-Uf, the head of the Internal Medicine Department at Shifa Hospital and a senior member of the hospital's Coronavirus Management Committee. Two of the Abu Al-Uf teenage children and two other family members were also buried in the rubble. The death of the 51-year-old physician, quote, was a huge loss at a very sensitive time, unquote, said Mohammed Abu Selma, the director of Shifa. Gaza's healthcare system, already gutted by Israeli and Egyptian blockade imposed in 2007 after Hamas seized power from rival Palestinian forces, had been struggling with a surge in coronavirus infections even before the latest conflict. Israel's airstrikes have leveled a number of Gaza City's tallest buildings, which Israel alleges contain Hamas military infrastructure. Among them was the building housing the Associated Press Gaza office and those of other media outlets. Sally Busby, the Associated Press executive editor, called for an independent investigation into the airstrike that destroyed the Associated Press office yesterday. Netanyahu alleged that Hamas's military intelligence was operating inside the building and said earlier today that any evidence would be shared through intelligence channels. Neither the White House nor the State Department will say if any had been. It's perfectly legitimate target, Netanyahu told CBS's Face the Nation. Asked if he had provided any evidence of Hamas's presence in the building in a call yesterday with the U.S. President Joe Biden, Netanyahu said, quote, we pass it through our intelligence people, unquote. Busby called for any such evidence to be laid out, quote, conflict situation, unquote, Busby said. Quote, we do not take sides in that conflict. We heard Israelis say they have evidence. We don't know what the evidence is, unquote. Meanwhile, media watchdog Reporters Without Borders asked the International Criminal Court earlier today to investigate Israel's bombing of the Associated Press building and other housing media organizations as a possible war crime. The Paris-based group said in a letter to the court's chief prosecutor, the offices of the 23 international and local media organizations have been destroyed over the past 6 days. It said the attack served, quote, to reduce, if not neutralize, the media capacity to inform the public. And in the southern African state of Zimbabwe, the government wants to mitigate the impact of COVID-19 by upgrading health facilities across the country, President Mnangagwa said. The president was speaking at the office at the official opening of two health facilities in Bulawayo, a pediatric orthopedic hospital and a COVID-19 isolation and treatment center. Zimbabwe COVID-19 response improved the quality of the country's healthcare system, and people will benefit beyond the pandemic following the several infrastructural development initiatives at hospitals, as well as the recruitment and training of more health personnel. President Mnangagwa declared the pandemic a state of disaster from the outset, leading to improved government resource allocations for the healthcare sector, as well as marshaling the private sector to come on board and help the government to boost healthcare delivery. You're listening to the Pan-African Newswire segment of the Pan-African Journal. I am your host, Abayomi Azikiwe. And in the Horn of Africa state of Ethiopia, Chinese People's Liberation Army donated COVID-19 vaccinations to Ethiopian Defense Forces, as reported by the Ethiopian News Agency. Chinese Ambassador to Ethiopia, Zhao Xinyang, on Friday handed over delivery to Kenia Yadeta, the Minister of Defense. Mr. Zhao sees the donation as a demonstration of strong relations between the two countries. He said the Chinese Army overcame serious challenges since the outbreak of the pandemic, and that the donation is made with the intention of to protect members of the Ethiopian Defense Forces from the pandemic. Ethiopian and Chinese Army cooperation areas is broad, and that multifaceted strategic partnership will be strengthened in the future, Mr. Zhao is cited as saying. And also in Ethiopia, the country has again delayed its national election after some opposition parties said they wouldn't take part. And if conflict in the country's Tigray region means no vote is being held there, further complicating Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's efforts to centralize power. The head of the National Election Board, Bertukan Amidikisa, in a meeting with political parties, representatives on yesterday said the June 5th vote in Africa's second most populous country would be postponed, citing the need to finish printing ballots, training staffers, and compiling voters' information. The board said she estimated a delay of 2 to 3 weeks. Ethiopia last year delayed the vote, the first major electoral test for Abiy, citing the COVID-19 pandemic that heightened tensions with the Tigray region's leaders, who declared that the prime minister's mandate had ended and definitely had held a regional vote of their own that Ethiopia called illegal. Since then, war in Tigray has killed thousands and led the United States to allege that, quote, ethnic cleansing, unquote, against Tigrayans was being carried out in the western part of Tigray, a region of some 6 million people. The term, quote, ethnic cleansing, unquote, refers to forcing a population from a region through expulsions and other violence, often including killings and assaults. Secretary of State Antony Blinken of the United States said yesterday that the United States is, quote, gravely concerned by the increasing number of confirmed cases of military forces blocking humanitarian access, unquote, to parts of Tigray, calling it, quote, unacceptable behavior, unquote. The statement again urged the immediate withdrawal from Tigray of soldiers from neighboring Eritrea who witnesses say have blocked or looted aid and carried out atrocities, including assaults. Both Eritrean and Ethiopian authorities have repeatedly promised such a withdrawal. And with that, we're going to, of course, conclude the Pan-African Newswire segment of our program. And, of course, concluding the Pan-African Newswire segment of our program, we'd like to mention, of course, that the United Nations chief said that foreign fighters and mercenaries remain in Libya in violation of the last October ceasefire agreement. The United Nations Secretary General called for their immediate withdrawal and an end to violations of the UN arms embargo, saying these are, quote, critical elements, unquote, peace in the North African country and region. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said in a report to the United Nations Security Council that was obtained on Friday that the smooth transfer of power to a new interim government, which took power in March, quote, brings renewed hope for the reunification of the country and its institutions for a lasting peace. But he said progress must continue on the political, economic, and security tracks to enable elections to go ahead for December the 14th. Libya was destroyed by the Pentagon, Central Intelligence Agency, and NATO-inspired counter-revolution that toppled the longtime Pan-Africanist revolutionary leader Muammar Gaddafi 10 years ago. It split the oil-rich North African state between a United Nations government in the capital after 2015 and rival authorities based in the country's east, which backed by armed groups, including the Libyan National Army, headed by Khalifa Haftar, a longtime Central Intelligence Agency operative. And with that, we're going to conclude the Pan-African Newswire segment of the Pan-African Journal. And concluding the Pan-African Newswire, we'd like to remind our listeners that the Pan-African Newswire is an international electronic press service. It is designed to foster intelligent discussions on the affairs of African people throughout the continent and the world. The press agency was founded in January of 1998. Since then, it has published thousands upon thousands of articles and dispatches in numerous newspapers, various newspapers and magazines and journals and research reports, and on blogs and websites throughout the world. The Pan-African Newswire represents the only daily international news source on Pan-African and global affairs. If you'd like to log on to the Pan-African Newswire, so you can stay abreast of some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day, all you need to do is go to the Pan-African Newswire website, and that's at panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. And the programs can be shared with other potential listeners. All you need to do is copy and paste the links into emails and send those emails out to other potential listeners. The links can also be copied and pasted on blogs and websites. The links can also be shared through social media networks such as Facebook and Twitter. This is Abayomi Azikiwe. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more of our program for this week.
Hey.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pan-African Journal, the worldwide radio broadcaster special edition of our program for Sunday, May 16th, 2021. Now we're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit, and we just heard the music of Detroit's own Anita Baker. Yes, you better watch your step. And we are watching our steps here at the Pan-African Journal, this special worldwide radio broadcast. Right now we want to move into a CGTN news report dealing with further the situation in Palestine and other geopolitical regions in Africa and throughout the world. Let's listen in.
DRC court sentences 30 people to death for involvement in fight between rival Muslim groups. And Tanzania following up on COVID-19 vaccines available in other countries to consider importation. Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Live. I am Penina Karibe, also coming up this hour. An innovator in Kenya churning out electric three-wheeled vehicles to help cut down on pollution from fuel. In sports, Uganda hopeful of successful Olympics with increased number of athletes. Tensions continue to escalate between Israel and Palestine as the conflict goes into the seventh day. Israel bombed the home of Hamas's chief in Gaza early on Sunday. At least three Palestinians were killed. Palestinians fired rockets towards Tel Aviv, causing people to flee to bomb shelters. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed he will continue to respond forcefully to rocket attacks. Nearly 150 people have been killed in Gaza since the battle began on Monday. Israel has reported 10 dead. On Saturday, Israel destroyed a tower block in Gaza housing the offices of the Associated Press and other media outlets. It said the building was also used by the Hamas group. We have our correspondent Noor Harazin joining us live now from Gaza. Noor, what is the latest from there?
Well, the situation is getting really worse here in the Gaza Strip. Every day we wake up and we say that this was one of the most horrific nights. However, it seems like every day that passes, things become more tough for the people of Gaza. Tonight was one of the hardest and most terrifying. We kept hearing Israeli, continuous Israeli bombings. There was more than 100 Israeli airplanes raised on the Gaza Strip and particularly Gaza City this night. The Israeli warplanes also targeted central Gaza City with several missiles, and we're talking about Al-Wahda Street, which is one of the most basic and most densely populated streets in Gaza. This street links eastern Gaza and northern and southern Gaza with Ashifa Hospital, which is Gaza's biggest medical compound. This street's infrastructure was totally destroyed. The Israeli warplanes targeted the road and also several buildings that were destroyed on the heads of its residents. According to the Palestinian medical sources, only in this attack, in Al-Wahda Street attack that happened today at dawn, more than 26 people were reported killed, including 10 women and 8 children. This brings up the death toll here in Gaza over the past 6 days up to 181 Palestinians killed, including 52 children and 33 women, while more than 1,200 were reported injured.
All right, Noor Harazin, live for us in Gaza. Many thanks, Noor. So let's go live now to Sderot on the Gaza border, where our correspondent Stephanie Freed is standing by. Stephanie, Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu says he will continue to respond forcefully to rocket attacks, but there are also a lot of reactions from around the world on yesterday's hit on Gaza by Israel. What else can you tell us about the from the Israeli side?
Well, you know, you were saying Benjamin Netanyahu said the operation will continue, and indeed on Saturday night he addressed the nation, and he said that That there won't be a ceasefire, not for the time being. As well, he called this a just and moral operation. That's how he referred to it. Also, Prime Minister Netanyahu accused Hamas of hiding behind civilians to carry out strikes on Israel and said that Israel is doing its utmost to minimize civilian casualties. At the same time, of course, the world is seeing civilian casualty death toll mount in Gaza, including dozens of children. Among the Israeli military figures, the chief military figures, the government, again, they say that this will continue, this operation will continue overnight and on Saturday and then overnight between Saturday and Sunday. There were heavy strikes on what Israel says were various targets in Gaza, as well as an ongoing barrage of rocket fire onto Israel from Gaza. There was somewhat of a lull Sunday morning, and then in the past hour, rocket fire has started up again from Gaza onto Israel's cities, and Israel continues striking. They say that they hit, again, they're hitting a Hamas underground network, and that they've hit just under a dozen rocket launchers.
So the UN Security Council is expected to meet to discuss the situation in Israel and the Gaza Strip. How is Israel reacting to all the diplomatic efforts underway to try and de-escalate the conflict?
Well, the word from Israel and the directive right now is no ceasefire, despite the fact that the U.S. State Department dispatched an envoy to Israel. The objectives that apparently they want to achieve in this operation, they say they haven't achieved just yet. There is tremendous and mounting pressure, especially now on Sunday as the UN Security Council does meet to discuss this violent latest flare-up. But again, Israel's government is not backing down. They're not calling a ceasefire. There is sort of on the imminent horizon, though, talk of a ceasefire within the coming days. We're just waiting, as is the world, to understand from Israel, from Israel's leaders, when that ceasefire will be, when they'll back down, when some sort of agreement will be struck.
All right, Stephanie Fried from the Gaza Border, many thanks. Now, the Associated Press and Al Jazeera have both condemned the Israeli military's airstrike on the building housing their Gaza offices.
We are shocked and horrified that the Israeli military would target and destroy the building housing AP's bureau and other news organizations in Gaza. They've long known the location of our bureau and knew journalists were there. This is an incredibly disturbing development. We narrowly avoided a terrible loss of life.
We have every reason to doubt whether Israel has the right to attack a building like this.
Al Jazeera has issued a statement condemning Israel's actions in the strongest terms. It says the Israeli airstrike is clearly an attempt to prevent journalists from reporting on what was happening in Gaza. AFP's global news director says he is deeply shocked by Israel's actions, while the executive director of the U.S. Committee to Protect Journalists has demanded Israel provide detailed and documented justification for the attack. Now, in Gaza, people have gathered at the funeral of two local families after they were killed in Israeli airstrikes on Saturday. The families were in a five-floor residential house in a refugee camp, which was destroyed in the attack. Our correspondent Noor Harazin went to the scene and met with a father who lost his four children.
Hundreds of Palestinians in Gaza participated in the funeral of the Al-Hadidi and Abu Hatab family members, who were killed by an Israeli airstrike in western Gaza Strip. According to Palestinian medical sources, 10 people were killed. Two of them were women. Eight were children aged between 5 and 14. Civil defense teams continue the search for survivors under the rubble. CGTN met with Mohammed Al-Hadidi, the father of four children who were killed in the airstrike. He also lost his wife. Al-Hadidi said his wife took the children out for an Eid al-Fitr visit to their aunt's home, and they decided to spend the night there, but they were killed.
They were just innocent children who were asleep, did not commit anything against Israel. All four of my children and my wife were killed in the bombing of the house tonight. I asked God for mercy for them. They died as martyrs.
5 months old, Omar al-Hadidi was the only survivor of the Israeli raid on the house. The Palestinian Health Ministry Undersecretary said the child was wounded in the leg, and he is a living miracle from the ruins.
Only this child, with severe injuries, escaped from this crime, to be a witness to this crime, and to judge the world and humanity. This crime is not the first, but it must be the last. The whole world must stand up and stop this attack.
Al-Shatih is the third largest refugee camp in the Palestinian territories, with a population of 85,000 registered refugees. With so many people packed into such a small area, any Israeli attack on the camp could cause many casualties. The Palestinian Health Ministry says more than 30 people were wounded in the same attack. Nur Harazin, CGTN, Gaza.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also voiced concerns over the conflict. It was in response to an Israeli airstrike overnight, which killed 10 people in the same family, including children, at the Al-Shatih refugee camp in Gaza. Guterres says he is dismayed by the civilian casualties. He also says he is deeply disturbed by Israel's airstrike on a building containing international media outlets. He has reminded all sides that any indiscriminate targeting of civilian and media structures violates international law and must be avoided at all costs. The UN Security Council will hold an emergency open meeting on the escalating violence later today. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi says the priority is to immediately stop the violence between Israel and Palestine. Wang says the cause of the current situation is the prolonged failure to find a solution to the Palestinian issue. He says the resolutions made by the UN Security Council on the peace process for the Middle East have not been effectively implemented. He has stressed the continued violation of the rights of the Palestinians to build an independent country. Wang also says China has promoted the UN Security Council to hold emergency consultations on the conflict twice, but he says the body has not yet reached an agreement as the US stands on the opposite side of international justice. Wang says China would chair an open debate on the conflict at the Security Council meeting later today and hopes the Council will reach a unanimous decision. Earlier this week, the U.S. vetoed a statement agreed on by all 14 other Security Council members. Saudi Arabia is today hosting an emergency meeting of foreign ministers from Islamic countries. Ministers of the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation will discuss what they are calling the Israeli aggression in the Palestinian territory, particularly violence in the vicinity of Al-Aqsa Mosque, according to a statement by the OIC carried by the Saudi press agency. Let's bring in CGTN's Adel Mahroui live for us from Cairo. Adel, what more can you tell us about the OIC meeting chaired by Saudi Arabia and the sensitive issue of the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
So this is an organization, an international organization of all Islamic states in the world. It's mainly from Asia and Africa. There are about 57 nations in this organization, making it the second largest international organization after the United Nations. Saudi Arabia, as you've mentioned, has called for this emergency meeting on the level of the foreign ministers to discuss the escalations in Israel and its attacks against Gaza, specifically with the development of the Sheikh Jarrah incident, where an East Jerusalem neighborhood is being evicted from its Palestinian residents forcibly. So there is a move from the Arab world, namely Saudi Arabia, is trying to get a bigger understanding or a bigger support after the Arab League held its emergency meeting and condemned the Israeli movement. Now Saudi Arabia is trying to get bigger reaction from the entire Islamic world against what is going on to the Palestinians and the devastations they've been living through for a week now. This comes at a time where the Arab world has been seeing unprecedented movements on the popular level and on the governmental level in support for the Palestine and the residents in Gaza, which has been an unprecedented popular and governmental support seen in many years, in many previous years. No matter how tough the situation is, this is maybe one of the most evidential awakening for Arab nations and Arab people to stand in support with Palestine.
The combination of the attempted eviction of Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem with its timing during the holy month of Ramadan has created public fury in the Muslim world. Muslim clerics, among them the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, the biggest Islamic university in the world, have condemned the latest developments, dedicating the weekly Friday prayer to Jerusalem. Scores protested across the globe in one of the biggest popular awakenings towards Palestine seen in recent years.
The Arab reaction outside Palestine was very important. We've noticed that after 73 years of Nakba Day, Arab protesters tried to breach the borders of Jordan, Lebanon and Syria. Such a movement was not notable during the past 10 years.
On the diplomatic level, the Arab League held an emergency meeting strongly condemning the Israeli attacks. Egypt sent a security delegation to Israel in hopes to reach a ceasefire. The United States, Turkey and Qatar too started their own mediation efforts.
Since the first moment that attacks spurred, Egypt rushed to prevent escalations, hoping to avoid the destruction and death we are seeing now. Egypt and Jordan are trying to get the Security Council resolution that doesn't face an American veto. The Arab League stance is rather feeble. We are sad to see the Arab nation normalizing ties with Israel that soon. It's a disappointing stance from them. They look for their own benefits, hoping to buy defense systems from Israel, which primitive rockets from Gaza are breaching.
While the military escalation appears to be heading to its peak, Arab humanitarian assistance flows. Jordan is sending shipments of medical supplies, while Egypt's only outlet to Gaza, the Rafah passage, is open to receive those injured from the Israeli airstrikes. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi ordered local hospitals to treat Palestinians for free.
The Palestinian death toll increases every day. More than 140 lives were lost in the first week and many more injured. This is the heaviest Israeli attack on Gaza in years, the intensity of which has sparked the strongest Arab and Muslim reaction seen in years, probably surpassing that when the United States relocated its Israel embassy to Jerusalem. Adel Mahroui, DGTN, Cairo.
Coming up to 18 minutes into the hour, you're watching Africa Live. Let's take a quick break. Straight ahead. DRC court sentences 30 people to death for involvement in fight between rival Muslim groups. And Tanzania following on COVID-19 vaccines available in other countries to consider importation for Tanzanians.
Africa is a continent of diversity, with varied climates and enchanting geography, and a people so distinct but with a shared enduring spirit. We are at the heart of the continent to bring you the untold stories.
Let's have a look.
We celebrate Africa as it shapes its own destiny. Africa Live. Find your voice.
Nigeria is my home. 160 million vibrant, ambitious individuals constantly seeking the perfect self-expression. It is these people who inspired me to be that person that is seen, to be a voice that is heard, and ultimately to be the anchor that I am. I have to tap in, tune in, and turn on the very best qualities within me to deliver the news. I'm Richard Ntah, an anchor, for CGTN.
A court in the Democratic Republic of Congo has sentenced 30 people to death for participating in a fight that left one police officer dead on Thursday. The fight broke out in the capital, Kinshasa, between two rival Muslim groups over the right to celebrate Ramadan at the city's main stadium. CGTN's Christo Chamringa has more from Kinshasa.
The Kinshasa District Court found 30 suspects guilty and sentenced them to death. Five of them were acquitted of the charges. Rival Muslim factions fought over the right to mark Ramadan at the stadium. A policeman was killed and several other people were injured in the violence. A police vehicle was also burnt in the clashes. The two Muslim factions have had a long-running rivalry over the leadership of the Islamic community in Congo. Muslims make up about 10% of the DRC population, and most of them are found in the east of the country. The death penalty handed down by the court comes 18 years after the DRC government temporarily prohibited them. Since then, death sentences were commuted to life imprisonment. Chris Chamringa, CGTN, Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo.
South Africa's cabinet has extended the country's national state of disaster provisions until mid-June. The extension, which is the country's third, comes at a time when COVID-19 cases, including those of the new Indian variant, have been rising daily. Angela Kupler has more on this story.
The national state of disaster extension allows the government to introduce more stringent lockdowns. However, officials are yet to announce if such measures will be imposed, despite the increase in daily infections.
We're a little bit worried about Gauteng. There is an emerging uptick, and it's more in the the more rural parts of Gauteng that there's this uptick.
That rise in COVID-19 cases isn't good news for local businesses, as it comes soon after two of the biggest tourism source markets banned their nationals from visiting South Africa.
I'm going to issue a challenge that, you know, I do think that the U.S. officials that are here in this country, they need to come out and tell us what is the logic behind this ban. We can't continue to have this type of ban. Same goes to U.K. I don't understand what is the logic behind it.
The ban has had a devastating effect on the tourism sector.
We've lost 61% of our business year on year during the pandemic. And we really don't see that at the moment. Until those source markets reopen, that's not going to come through. So the real effect of that is that we've got to try and reduce costs, but there's no ways that I can reduce costs by 61%. So we really are, with our service providers, the people that we operate with and our staff, we communicate that message, and we've got to see it through as a team, and we will get there.
Tourism operators quickly learned that communication is critical, especially with the international tour operators and agents who book tourists to visit local resorts.
If you phone your traditional service suppliers, none of them are working there. They're different people, etc. We've consistently kept contact now with the various operations, renewing who the contact people are, where they are, so that when the buttons do get switched on, I think we'll be in a much better position to be able to receive preferred business.
Domestic tourism is picking up some of the spare capacity, but operators have warned that this trend is not sustainable.
But I think people also understand that it is the pandemic, so our rack rates have not changed, but we do offer the discounts in time frames. So if people look at our website, they'll see the prices, and we'll normally overlay it with a discount. At the moment, we're discounting most of our rates by approximately 40% for the local market.
There's no question there's still going to be some more casualties from the COVID virus. The question now is whether companies and businesses will be able to pivot and find solutions. I'm Angelo Coppola for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan says the government is following up on COVID-19 vaccines that are available in other countries to see if they can be ordered for Tanzanians. The president made this statement while addressing a meeting coordinated by the National Muslim Council of Tanzania in Dar es Salaam. CGTN's Isaac Lukando has more.
Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan has given the strongest indication yet
that her government may be considering procuring COVID-19 vaccines in the near future. In an address to the nation, she said this comes as a result of the continued threat of COVID-19 around the world.
COVID-19 has affected the entire world. In order to fight against it, we have to join other countries in fighting the pandemic.
President Samia says while a decision to procure vaccines has not yet been made, citizens' concerns about their safety will be taken into consideration.
You have warned on COVID-19 vaccines, and I take that. One thing I want to assure you is your government is listening and will take action. We won't just receive everything they give us. As far as the vaccines are concerned, we will follow up and make sure they are suitable for our people.
Setting up a COVID-19 committee and considering the importation of vaccines may be viewed by some as a departure from her predecessor's stance. The late President Dr. John Magufuli had expressed reservations about COVID-19 vaccines, citing concerns about their safety. As Tanzanians await a final decision on the procurement of the vaccines, President Samia has asked the nation to continue taking precautions against COVID-19. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Let's turn to Senegal, where Chinese-donated COVID-19 vaccines arrived on Friday. The shipment included doses of the Sinopharm vaccine. In a ceremony, the Chinese ambassador to Senegal, Xiao Han, signed for the donation. The event took place in the presidential palace in the presence of President Macky Sall. The Chinese ambassador reaffirmed the strong cooperation between both countries.
It is a great pleasure and honor to be received in audience by His Excellency Macky Sall, the President of the Republic of Senegal. I signed an important document of the Chinese donation on behalf of our government. We touched on the friendship and cooperation between China and Senegal, and the Senegalese head of state is very happy with the progress of the cooperation project between our two countries. Taking the example of vaccine cooperation, we can say that it is a flagship of our cooperation.
At least 12 people have died after two separate tornadoes ripped through east and central China on Friday night. Four of the deaths and 19 injuries happened in the eastern city of Suzhou, and eight people were killed in the central city of Wuhan. Our reporter Zhou Jiexin talked to some survivors in Wuhan.
The tornado hit the workers' sheds in suburban Wuhan without any warning, raising them to the ground within seconds. One man working the evening shift had to hide inside an empty storage tank at the construction site 200 meters away.
It was quite loud. Cars outside were thrown all over the place. It was quite a mess. When the rain stopped, we ran out to search for our colleagues. One of them was critically injured, and we carried him to the road so our director could bring us to this hospital.
The strong gale, packing winds of nearly 24 meters per second, destroyed two tower cranes and a total of 8,000 square meters of construction site sheds. Rescue efforts continued throughout the night in this industrial area where the waste treatment plant where Tai works was the worst affected facility.
Hundreds of rescue personnel, including firefighters and medical staff, arrived soon after the accident. We've been cleaning this area after completing the work searching for survivors early in the morning.
Such a disaster has seldom happened in Wuhan. It was distressing. Some patients were in a state of shock. We've given them some psychological support, which has been helpful. We've also prepared clothes, daily necessities, as they were just wearing their sleeping clothes when the tornado arrived.
Tornado is not often seen here in China, though it happens every year in coastal and inland cities. Authorities said that we'll step up alert and response efforts with relevant departments. Zhou Jiaxin, CGTN, Wuhan.
China has received worldwide praise for successfully landing on Mars. The unnamed spacecraft carrying a rover touched down on the fourth planet from the Sun on Saturday morning. Successful missions to Mars are considered incredibly challenging due to the planet's harsh temperature and environment. Director of the Shallow Sky Section of the Astronomical Society of Southern Africa, Clyde Foster, says given the odds, this is an incredible achievement.
We've seen that over the years,
there has been only about a 50% success rate for all the missions that have gone to Mars. So for this to be the first mission from China where they have successfully put the spacecraft into orbit and then deployed the rover successfully down to the surface is an incredible achievement. The conditions for achieving a successful landing are incredibly challenging with the type of atmosphere that we have on Mars. It's a very thin atmosphere. We obviously have wind conditions. There's always the risk of dust storms on Mars. I think the best type of synergistic picture that I can paint is the Apollo missions to the moon. Mankind is forever pushing back new frontiers, and the field of planetary science and planetary exploration is a classic example. We are pushing back the boundaries of humankind, and we've already been to the moon, and we saw the effect that had on humankind. And now we are pushing out into the solar system. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the fact is that hopefully within the next 10 years or so, we will be seeing humans on Mars. We are exploring and trying to understand where we have come from. And Mars is the most habitable planet compared with Earth that we have in the solar system.
This has taken me completely out of my depth, but at the same time it's exciting. It's new, it's different, it's a challenge.
It's really exciting.
Africa is the nexus of enterprise, and global business will tell you why it matters.
From the mega investment projects to multi-billion dollar mergers and acquisitions.
Africa today collects, just in terms of revenues from taxes alone, $545 billion a year. If you take 10% of that and you devote it to the energy sector, problem solved.
All this on Global Business, weekdays at this time on CGTN.
You don't find the stories of North Africa by sitting on the sidelines.
You've got to get out, go there, and you'll find them.
In the bazaars of Casablanca. Among the crowds in Cairo.
Who comes to visit Cairo, the ancient capital of Egypt?
Along the waters of the Nile. Along the sands of the Sahara.
No one else will take you where we can in North Africa. No one else will show you what it's all about. CGTN, see the difference.
Kenya's capital, Nairobi, is polluted by emissions from cars, buses and conventional fossil-fueled three-wheelers, commonly known as tuk-tuks. But one man in Kenya is seeking to have pollution cut significantly after starting to produce electric tuk-tuks and hand carts locally. CGTN's Enoch Sekolia met with the creator, Kenneth Gwantai, to find out more.
My name is Kenneth Wantai. I work with the National Youth Service at the end of Research and Innovation. The projects you see here started just as an idea on how to revolutionize the conventional fossil fuel three-wheelers we have in Kenya and across Africa. We realized that there is a lot of problems that is encountered by the users of the conventional fossil fuel tuk-tuk, in that it uses fossil fuel, which is very expensive for them. Secondly, the tuk-tuk that we have in our market pollute the environment through carbon emissions. Thirdly, the tuk-tuk we have a raw loading capacity. They carry 3 passengers. Now, the solution we have is an electric tuk-tuk. The benefits are our tuk-tuk has more rounding capacity than the conventional fossil fuel tuk-tuk, in that it carries 6 passengers. The other thing is that it has a rounding capacity of 1.5 ton, meaning it is more powerful than the conventional tuk-tuk. The third thing is that it does not pollute the environment because it is purely electric. And on top of that, we went ahead to invent a system that will enable our tuk-tuk to self-recharge while in motion. If you look at the conventional manual handicraft we have in our town today and cities today, you realize that they are all associated with masculinity. It means if you don't have enough strength, you cannot be able to push or pull them. But now the electric handcart we have is more powerful because you don't need to push or pull. All what you need to do is drive as you walk.
Cocoa farmers across Cote d'Ivoire remain disheartened after prices for their commodity have fallen for the second year running. The West African country is the world's biggest producer of the key ingredient for chocolate. However, growers in one village have turned to organic cocoa farming in efforts to revive the industry and provide a more environmentally friendly option to international markets. CGTN's Joy Kiruki Juma reports.
In Mbirimbo, a village in central Cote d'Ivoire, organic cocoa farming has been ongoing for the past 11 years. A local farmers' cooperative society assists growers to sell their produce at twice the market rate for non-organic cocoa. Ethiquable, a French company that specializes in marketing fair trade products, has invested in purchasing their harvest.
They have very good quality cocoa that is recognized internationally. We were able to dismantle the cliché that Ivorian cocoa is of poor quality. We were able to demonstrate here that when the growers are trained, master their art, and are well paid for this additional work, we are quite capable of making very good cocoa in Cote d'Ivoire.
Farmers weed their fields manually and have developed specific methods to dry and ferment cocoa beans.
When you know the cocoa is consumed, we make chocolate with it. We have to make it natural. I am sincerely proud of this. Even so, outside my village, I tell them that I do organic. They ask me questions like, what is organic? And I explain to them.
An emerging concern in Cote d'Ivoire is about the health impact for farmers who use conventional chemicals to fertilize the soil and kill pests. The cooperative's farmers are testing safer formulas made from residues derived from locally grown plants.
Organic farming is difficult because we don't use herbicides. All the work is done with machetes, and we do not treat the cocoa with chemicals. Organic cocoa, in fact, requires more work, but it is still worth it financially, also for health reasons, because by not using chemicals, there's already health benefits.
The chocolate made from their cocoa is exported and sold in French supermarkets.
When we started, we saw the importance of being able to grow organic, and we saw what organic has brought to us. At the beginning, I had a bicycle. Today I can build a house and I have a motorcycle. There has been a change in my life. I was able to send my children to school as they should be.
Organic chocolate accounts for just 8% of the national market, but is growing at 18% per year. 10 other cooperatives in Côte d'Ivoire now produce organic cocoa, and others are expected to follow suit. Joy Kiruki Juma, CGTN.
There's been a debate for years about how books are disappearing in the digital age. In China, that may not necessarily be the case. Physical bookshops are making a comeback across the country as the government tries to encourage reading. Yang Jinghao reports.
This bookstore in southwest China's Chengdu city has been attracting visitors with its unique design, which integrates elements of the renowned Dujiangyan Irrigation Project. It was opened in September and offers all sorts of cultural products.
We've tried to impress visitors with the store's exterior design, but we also hope they enjoy our selection of books and cultural and creative products, as well as our service, so that they spend more time here and end up buying our products.
But this is much more than a simple bookshop. The multifunctional space also serves as a place for reading, socializing, and family activities, among others.
This is the reading space we jointly created with the local government and the city's library. Apart from reading here for free, people can also borrow books with a valid identity document and return them at any designated site.
Reports say more than 1,500 bookstores closed in 2020, partly due to the COVID-19 epidemic, but some 4,000 new ones opened, with more than 100 in Chengdu.
Official data shows that Chengdu has more than 3,600 bookstores and reading facilities, outnumbering any other Chinese city. Behind this is the city government's strong support for the development of this cultural sector.
We set up a special fund in 2016 to support brick-and-mortar bookstores, allocating 7 million yuan each year. A new store can get a maximum subsidy of 500,000 yuan. We also encourage bookstores to create innovative projects, which will also be rewarded.
For businesses, what's more important is to keep exploring new business models under market pressure, especially the competition from e-commerce platforms, which usually offer handsome discounts.
We plan more than 300 culture events each year to enrich people's experience in our store. We also actively participate in the city's initiative to boost consumption and revive the industry by distributing coupons and offering discounts. We will introduce more similar measures in the future.
We plan to hold various activities in schools, neighborhoods, and government departments to promote reading among different groups.
Many people are happy to see bookstores growing in their city. They hope there will be more physical stores as the government pushes forward its national book reading campaign. Yang Jinghao, CGTN, Chengdu, Sichuan Province.
Join us in global business and see Africa through our eyes.
The greatest journeys, the greatest sights, the greatest adventures.
Here in Tanatar, this weir allows the locals to walk on water.
We're far more than just TV news. We're your passports to the wonders of Africa.
To bring you stories of struggle, survival, and hope.
So let's explore. CGTN, see the difference.
You're watching breaking news on CGTN.
Welcome back to Africa Live. A tree of Kenyan entrepreneurs is transforming the lives of artisans by creating an online marketplace for their crafts. Built as a one-stop shop for African handicrafts, the digital platform is seeking to reach a global market. The GTN's Wokista Nyaboa has this story.
Bead by painstaking bead, Kimani Nderitu is creating an elaborate work of art. These are skills he has honed over years of practice as an artist. He paints and carves and molds and sculpts. Nothing involving art is too difficult for him to learn. And this year, he has acquired even more skills as he ventured into the world of online sales. The Culture Hub by Muthoni Unchained is an online marketplace started by three Kenyan friends with a love of authentic African pieces. They often went hunting for them in street markets.
It got to a point where you buy these items and sell them to your colleagues. So we saw an opportunity and a hunger for these items, but people can't easily access them.
Some of the vendors whose work they loved lived in far-flung places, and when COVID-19 struck, disrupting the local markets, the need for an online marketplace to connect artists, vendors and buyers became even more urgent.
Before Corona, the market was good. All you need to do is to come with new art, very creative and very unique, and people are there to achieve it and to accept it. So after Corona, and then everything stopped.
Well, there are so many artisans or so many vendors dealing in fashion, art items in Africa, but they didn't have a platform where they could access a lot of consumers.
The online crafts marketplace brings together artisans as well as raw material providers, enabling the group to negotiate fair prices for raw materials as well as loan services. Artists create accounts, upload pieces, and watch them sell. Over 100 vendors and artisans have signed up.
Me, what I normally receive is that, oh, Kimani, bring a certain picture, somebody wants it, I deliver, it goes. So this is one of the market that I would love myself very much.
It means sellers can now access markets beyond the country's borders.
Our biggest customers have been in Denmark and Germany, where we sell to boutiques there who resell African items as well to them in wholesale.
Artists continue to long for the day when the pandemic will end and they will be able to go back to the markets that they are accustomed to. But even after they return, online platforms will continue to play an important role, taking their artwork to the world. Wilkinson Nyabwasu, GTN in Nairobi, Kenya.
And coming up in sports. Uganda hopeful of successful Olympics with increased number of athletes.
How would you create your legend? On the field. On the tracks. In the arenas of Africa. Were you born to be a player? Could this moment be yours? Sports Scene. Find your game.
Uganda has emerged as a dominant force in distance running, and the resumption of athletics in the country is helping to identify more running talent. With the Tokyo Summer Games first approaching, the East African nation could land their biggest medal haul in their Olympics history, as CGTN's Leon Senyange reports.
Off to yet another race. It's been a long wait for many of these athletes to get back on track. For Dismas Yeko, the time out since the suspension of sports due to the COVID.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pan-African Journal, this special worldwide radio broadcast for Sunday, May 16th, 2021. We just heard an extensive news broadcast from CGTN earlier today, and covering issues involving Palestine and many other issues in Africa and the international community. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our concluding segment.
Boy, I mean, I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome back.
And you're listening to the Pan-African Journal, the worldwide radio broadcast, and that was a song entitled Grapevine from the group Brownstone. And right now we want to move back into more analysis of the situation in Palestine. This is from the South African Broadcasting Corporation. Let's listen in.
Strikes on targets in Gaza, with one hitting the Hamas chief in the territory Yahya al-Sinwar. In response, Hamas militants fired more rockets at cities in southern Israel. Meanwhile, the International Relations Department has released a number for a toll-free line which South Africans who have relatives in Gaza can call to establish whether their loved ones are safe or not. The number is 012-351-1000. 012-351-1000. We'll try and keep that number on the screen for the duration of the show. Meanwhile, thousands.
This is the moment an Israeli missile strike destroyed a high-rise building housing the Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and other office spaces and homes in Gaza on Saturday. The owner of the building and journalists here are pleading on the phone with an Israeli intelligence officer who warned them the attack was coming and to evacuate. Al Jazeera's correspondent Wael Al-Dadu reporting that they didn't have time to grab their equipment. Israel says the building housed assets belonging to Hamas's military intelligence. The latest of many such attacks that Israeli forces say are response to the thousands of Hamas rockets fired toward Israel in the last few days. Meanwhile, the civilian toll of the conflict and civil unrest across Israel and the Palestinian territories is mounting. There are fears that Gaza's only power station may run out of fuel within days, and foreign aid is starting to trickle in. Morocco is sending 40 tons of medical supplies, food, and blankets to the West Bank and Gaza. Egypt is also sending ambulances into Gaza to try and bring Palestinians back to Egyptian hospitals. Diplomatic efforts to stop the crisis have shown no sign of progress.
Meanwhile, thousands of protesters in a number of European cities marched in support of Palestine as the worst violence in years rages on between Israel and Palestine in the Gaza Strip.
Thousands of demonstrators marched from Hyde Park to the Israeli embassy in Kensington after a week where at least 126 people have been killed in Gaza and 7 people have been killed in Israel. The demonstration in London was organized by Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Friends of Al-Aqsa, Palestinian Forum in Britain, Stop the War Coalition, Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, and the Muslim Association of Britain. Organizers of the march said they were protesting against evictions of Palestinians from Sheikh Jarrah, a predominantly Palestinian area of East Jerusalem, the bombing of Gaza, and the deaths of Palestinian civilians. In Berlin, firecrackers were hurled at an Israeli reporter for the Khan public broadcaster. Antonio Yamin said she was attacked by demonstrators when they heard her report on the protest in Hebrew. In Madrid, about 2,500 people, many of them young people wrapped in Palestinian flags, marched to the Puerta del Sol plaza in the city center.
We have come to defend the Palestinian people from genocide they are suffering because they are being killed. We have been silent for a lot of years. It is time for us to go out and speak for all those Palestinians who are dying these days and defend them. Because if we don't, no one else will.
We want the whole world to know what Israel is doing to the Palestinian people. It is genocide. It's not a conflict or war. They are being massacred. And so the whole world must become aware and put an end to this once and for all.
With the violence in Israel and Palestinian territories escalating, these pro-Palestinian protests are likely to continue.
We're now joined by SABC Foreign Editor Sophie Mukwena for an update. A very good morning to you, Sophie. Thanks for making the time.
Good morning, Desiree.
Well, what happened yesterday was unprecedented. What has been the reaction from the international community?
I think the main focus yesterday in terms of the reaction was the United States of America. The President of the United States of America, Joe Biden, did make a call to the Palestinian President, Mahmoud Abbas, where they discussed generally the relations between the two countries and also what is happening currently in Jerusalem and also in the West Bank. And the President of the United States of America has again emphasized the fact that America is gearing itself to engage the two parties, that Israel and Palestine, to ensure that they find a solution. We always talk about a lasting solution, but when you look at all the leaders of the United States of America who have been in power since the conflict started, none of them has been able to really bring a lasting solution to the standoff in that conflict. The problem here also I think it was on Wednesday, the President of the United States of America did call Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And many people around the world perceived that as America again taking sides. And yesterday, after the bombing of the building that is housing media, and not only Al Jazeera, because people seek expediency by saying, you have Al Jazeera that is biased, but you have other media houses who were in the same building, and most of them, their headquarters are in the United States of America. And therefore, the fact that some people are saying it was an attack directed at Al Jazeera because Al Jazeera is biased, the question is, what about other media houses that are there? But also, you have ordinary Palestinians, ordinary citizens, staying in those buildings. And therefore, when you attack the building, you are really attacking the livelihoods of not only those people you are attacking, you are targeting Hamas, you are actually causing challenges and problems and mayhem and misery to ordinary people. And they also spoke about a decision by the United States of America to resume line to assist or lifeline to assist the Palestinians with humanitarian assistance. And also President Biden saying that his administration supports that Palestinians have a right to live in dignity, security, freedom, and also be able to access economic opportunities, because we know they are really, really suffering, the Palestinians. They don't have access to economic opportunities. So it was some sort of a better approach to the question of the Middle East conflict, because at least President Biden was able to do or to undo the damage by calling Palestine and also speaking to the leader of the Palestinian Authority.
Any reaction from President Cyril Ramaphosa?
The last time we heard of President Ramaphosa's direct reaction, let me say presidency, not Derko in this case, was when he was closing the ANC-NEC meeting, just a general statement or reiterate what is ANC's position on the question of Middle East, and particularly that conflict between Palestine and also Israel, and also maintaining the ANC policy that has been there for many years, supporting the Palestinian people and also their quest for freedom. But in terms of government statement from the president as head of state, an ally of the Palestinian people, South Africa, we haven't had any statement. Only Derko issued a statement condemning what's happening and the attacks leveled at both sides, but also, as you have indicated, giving those numbers for South Africans who might be trapped in that area where there is conflict and fighting.
Sophie, what can we expect going forward, or in the short term today? What do we expect to happen?
I think conflict will continue. And secondly, the main story today is the meeting of the Security Council in New York at the United Nations. The 15 member countries will meet and try and come up with a statement in line with what would have been agreed on. But it is going to be a problem because these permanent five members, they don't approach the Palestinian-Israeli question in a same manner or same eye, or they have the same policy. And therefore, there's fear that the United States of America, as the current chair of the Security Council, will try and water down the text. And therefore, it can even use its veto power if they are not happy about the content of the statement. And therefore, it's not clear whether they will finally today agree on a strong statement that speaks to action as well, not only just talk. But unfortunately, the permanent five with their veto powers can again today demonstrate their powers in terms of veto power, with Russia having hostile relations currently with the United States of America. I can't see them agreeing on a statement unless the Secretary General of the United Nations is able to convince all parties to come up with a statement at least, because the past two meetings, nothing came out of that meeting. I'm also disappointed that the Africa group is not vocal this time around. The Africa group at the United Nations, and also those who are representing Africa in the Security Council. If I were to mention a country like Kenya, you know, we were part of the Security Council as a rotation system takes effect. But unfortunately, now you have Kenya. I haven't heard a word from Kenya. While on the other hand, you have the AU that has issued a statement condemning the bombardment and also firing of rockets and also firing of missiles. In other words, taking an independent, not biased position in terms of the lives of ordinary people in both countries, that they must be protected.
Sophie, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed as we watch to see if the fighting stops, and also if the international community is able to rally and come through to assist. Thank you so much for your time. Sophie.
Welcome back. And that was a report from the South African Broadcasting Corporation on the current situation in Palestine. And we want to right now listen to another report from the SABC on the call by the United Nations Secretary General for a ceasefire.
The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on all parties in the Israel-Palestinian conflict to allow mediation efforts to intensify and succeed. The United Nations Security Council is meeting over the ongoing conflict that erupted on Monday. Pope Francis also called for an end to fighting during his weekly address in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. In a televised speech today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that an end to 7 days of hostilities was not imminent. So earlier today, Israeli airstrikes killed 33 Palestinians, including 13 children in Gaza, according to health officials there, while militants continued to fire rockets into Israel. According to health officials in Gaza, the pre-dawn attacks were on houses in the center of Gaza City. The death toll in Gaza jumped to 181, including 52 children, since the fighting erupted on Monday. In Israel, 10 people, including 2 children, have been killed in rocket attacks by Hamas and other militant groups. Israel's Security Cabinet was due to meet later today to discuss those hostilities. Let's get the latest now. Joined live by SABC News correspondent at the United Nations in New York, Sharon Bryce. Peace, a very good evening to you. Thanks indeed for your time. So what's the latest? Just about an hour or an hour and a half ago or so, the United Nations Secretary General quite vocal on the ongoing hostilities.
Their message, Griselda, continues to be consistent on this issue. They've been calling for a de-escalation in the region. He called for a ceasefire as early as Friday of last week, again reiterating his call for this ceasefire, warning that it has the potential to unleash an uncontainable security and humanitarian crisis and to further foster extremism, not only in the occupied Palestinian territory in Israel, but in the region as a whole. He opened the ongoing meeting in the Security Council earlier. Let's watch what the Secretary General had to say.
The current hostilities are utterly appalling. This latest round of violence only perpetuates the cycles of death, destruction and despair, and pushes farther to the horizon any hopes of coexistence and peace. Fighting must stop. It must stop immediately. Rockets and mortars on one side, the aerial and artillery bombardments on the other, must stop. I appeal to all parties to heed this call. United Nations is actively engaging all sides towards an immediate ceasefire. The only way forward is to return to negotiations with the goal of a two-state solution, leaving two states side by side in peace, security and mutual recognition, with Jerusalem as the capital of both states, all based on relevant UN resolutions, international law and prior agreements.
General's Middle East envoy, Griselda Thor Venslund, speaking directly, confirmed that they 2,900 indiscriminate rocket attacks from Gaza fired by Hamas, 950 airstrikes against what Israel is calling militant targets in Gaza. As you mentioned earlier, 181 Palestinian deaths, including 52 children, 31 women. There have also been 10 Israeli deaths, including a soldier and two children. So the call from the UN seeking the Security Council to speak with one voice and to implement a ceasefire here.
Rockets and mortars on one side.
Well, Sherwin, one of the other things that's been raised over the past 24 hours, of course, the attacks on media there. We also heard a bit earlier on the United Nations Secretary General speak about that as well.
Yeah, saying that he was very concerned. Of course, a lot of people in the international community, Griselda, seeking more information from the Israel Defense Force as to why specifically this building in Gaza City that housed the likes of the Associated Press and Al Jazeera was targeted. We also heard from the Associated Press president calling for more information to understand why exactly Israel targeted this building. But what we also heard from the two protagonists in this conflict, the Israelis and the Palestinians, are two very different versions. The Israelis are seeking to frame this as, you know, an issue around their security vis-a-vis the indiscriminate rocket attacks from Gaza and Hamas, while the Palestinian foreign minister was seeking to look at the historical context here as to why Palestinians are fighting for their independence. Let's listen to both of those arguments that were made earlier in the Security Council today. Watch.
We are not two neighbors living side by side in peace. Israel is the armed thief who has entered our house and is terrorizing our family. It destroys our homes, oppresses our people, generation after generation, decades after decades, and then claims a right to security that it denies us. Why don't you put yourself on our shoes? What would you do if your country was occupied, your people persecuted, besieged, massacred? Better yet, what did you do to achieve your independence and end the oppression of your people? Israel continues proclaiming that Jerusalem is a unified capital of Israel. Have you ever seen the city more divided? The international consensus you have all helped shape and defend is being destroyed in front of our very eyes. The alternative that Israel chose is apartheid. Yes, apartheid. And one day soon,
Even this council will not be able to deny this reality.
Member of the Security Council, let me ask you, what would you do if thousands of terrorist rockets were being fired at your country, at your people, at your parents or children? How would you respond if an organization with a similar fanatic jihadist ideology as ISIS was bombing Beijing or Moscow or Dublin and shutting down the airports of Paris or Oslo or London? What would you expect the Security Council to do? Mr. President, this is not the first time that Hamas has indiscriminately fired deadly missiles at Israeli civilians while hiding behind Palestinian civilians. But this time, it's different. It was completely premeditated by Hamas in order to gain political power. It was all a part of their vicious plan. While Hamas seeks the destruction of the State of Israel, it's also vying to take power in the West Bank and to replace the Palestinian Authority.
Griselda, Ambassador Gilad Erdan, also, Hamas uses children to protect its missiles. Israel uses missiles to protect its children. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad Malki also saying how many Palestinians is worthy of Palestinian deaths is worthy of condemnation. What is the threshold for outrage from the international community? And certainly a question that they are seeking answers from the UN Security Council today, Griselda.
Sharon, thank you very much. SABC News correspondent.
Welcome back. And that was another report from the South African Broadcasting Corporation. We want to thank our colleagues at the SABC for sharing those reports related to Palestine, the situation inside Palestine, the response of governments throughout the international community, as well as the debates that have been taking place within the United Nations Security Council. And this is Abayomi Azikiwe. We've, of course, come to the end of our program for today, this special edition of our program for Sunday, May 16, 2021. We've been broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. If you'd like to have access to this program, as well as over 1,000 other archived editions of the Pan-African Journal, just go to our website at the Pan-African Radio Network. That's at blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. That's blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. If you'd like to read the Pan-African Newswire, just go to panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com, so you can stay abreast of some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day. And we're going to be closing out with the music of the legendary Dinah Washington. This is Abayomi Azikiwe signing off, and have a beautiful week.
Your heart of mine is singing, lover, where can you be? You came at last, love had its day. That day is past, you've gone away. This aching heart of mine is singing, lover, come on back to me. Well, I remember every little thing we used to do. I'm so lonely. Every road I walk alone, I've walked alone with you. No, I wonder I am lonely. The sky is blue, the night is cold, the moon is new, but love is old. And while I'm waiting here, this heart of mine is singing, lover, lover, come back to me.